Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to When Christians Speak Online Talk Radio, broadcasting out of the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. Today's voice crying out in the wilderness, prepare ye the way of the Lord. When Christians Speak is dedicated to lifting up the name of Christ Jesus and spreading the good news. So it's my brother, can you spare a dime? My God shall supply my need. Don't hesitate because I am a seed. Cause every good.
Amen. Praise the Lord, everybody. Welcome to another broadcast on When Christians Speak Talk Radio. Today, I'm excited about our special broadcast on this Saturday of Wings of the Spirit with Veronica Burnett and Carla Smith. Amen. We will be talking, or they will be talking more about Domestic Violence Awareness Month, which is in the month of October. This is a very serious topic. And just talking with them in a few minutes ago about the impact that domestic violence awareness is taking place in the United States and what's going on worldwide, but especially during this time of the Corona virus and everything. So I want to welcome you ladies, Carla, and welcome you, Veronica, to this particular broadcast. And like I had told you earlier, I'm just going to just turn everything over to you guys, and we can just go from there, because I know we have a lot to cover. For those that are listening on the broadcast through online, or maybe you're listening in a different country, I want to welcome you again. This is a special broadcast called The Wings of the Spirit. We're talking about Domestic Violence Awareness Month with Carla Smith and Veronica Burnett. So at this time, I hand them over to you. I want to welcome you again, ladies. If you want to share just a little bit about yourself, that's fine. Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Ray, for having both of us here today. This is Veronica Burnett. I will turn it over to my good friend, Carla Smith, to introduce herself to us.
Thank you, Veronica. Thank you, Reverend Ray. I am grateful for this opportunity to share with you all this evening. You know, advocacy work is something that I've been very passionate about, especially as a survivor of sexual abuse, childhood abuse. And, you know, I had a show on When Christians Speak Talk Radio a couple years ago, and, we shared a lot about sexual abuse and domestic violence and empowering survivors and victims. But, you know, little did I know that I would be back on the broadcast sharing my own story about my survival as a domestic violence victim, survivor. I hate to use the word victim because I know despite what I go through, I'm always an overcomer. But I'll just share a little bit quickly about my story. And it's very new and fresh. And me and Veronica spoke the other day, and I was just sharing with her that I'm still really in the healing process of dealing with my situation, and I've been very transparent and vocal about it lately just because as an advocate, I can't empower and advocate for others if I don't empower and advocate for on behalf of myself. So, you know, I am newly divorced as of literally last week. my divorce was final, and I was married for 13 years to one of my childhood friends, and we pretty much grew up together. We grew up in the marriage together. It was very difficult being married in your early 20s, having a baby, getting married shortly after, and then really trying to figure out who you were within a confines of a marriage before you really even, you know, figured out who you were as an adult. So, I understand now why people get married later in life and why they wait, but it really, it was difficult because we both grew up in church. We were both ministry leaders, both became ordained. He was an ordained minister. I was ordained as a prophet. We both were ministry leaders over our youth ministry in church. And shortly after I had begun experiencing abuse, it started somewhat as emotional, verbal, but then it escalated into physical probably like 6 years ago, I'll say. And his anger became to the point where, like, I could literally talk to him and not even raise my voice. But he would say, it's the tone of your voice. And it got to the point where I'm like, okay, well, if I don't say anything at all, let me just listen to what he has to say and not even respond. And then it became, I'm being disrespectful because I'm not responding. So I was trying to do different things to not, I guess, antagonize, provoke him. And once again, you know, like Veronica and I talked about, downplaying the abuse, making the excuses for why this person is angry with me. I downplayed it. I made excuses. I blamed myself. And the first incident, you know, he choked me. He spit on me. Like, I remember he ripped one of my earrings out of my ears because when he grabbed me and slammed me up against the wall when he choked me, my earring, like ripped out of my ear. And of course, I have small children, so our children, you know, a lot of times were witness to some of the things that occurred. But I didn't grow up in a household where there was domestic violence. I didn't grow up around anything like that. So to my knowledge, there was no history of it on his side as well. But he definitely had anger issues. A lot of it, I felt, stemmed from his childhood issues with his mother and father. And I have found out some things about just their family history as well as I was trying to fix my family. So we would go to counseling with our pastors, our ministry leaders. I used to be an advocate of that, I guess, because I am a survivor of sexual abuse and domestic violence. I am more on the side of get professional help. Pastors and ministry leaders are great. They're a great support system, but a lot of them are not licensed and trained to deal with certain issues, especially trauma. And so I already suffered with anxiety and depression from being sexually abused, and I felt I was overcoming that in my 20s, but now I'm thrown into the throes of a domestic violence situation. So now I'm dealing with that. And it was always like, pray about it, work it out, stay together. So, of course, marriage, you know, and when you grow up as a Christian, it's forever. You don't get divorced. You work through your issues. So, once again, I'm constantly working at it. I'm trying to do everything I think I should do to make it better. But the situations just escalate. And they were few and far between, but then towards the end, it was more frequent. My children are getting older now. My daughter, now she's a teenager. My son is not far behind. And they're witnessing this. And I remember the last time, like last year that the incident happened, he left and my daughter like stepped in and was like, Mom, like I was so angry with Dad, like I almost stepped in. And when she said that, I was like, wow, like, okay, what am I doing? Like, what am I showing my child? Like, I'm showing her this because this is her dad. This is acceptable. This is okay. And I had a decision to make. And it was difficult towards the end of last year. I just really, like, just thought about my life. Like, yeah, like, this was supposed to be forever, but I've already overcome sexual abuse and the trauma that comes with that. I'm still, you know, there's triggers, but I'm going through a healing process, and I'm okay. But now I got to deal with this, and I got to deal with the effects that it has on my children. So, long story short, I guess I can share this. In January, I went shopping. My daughter had a hair appointment, took her, came home, and my husband was like, where were you at? Why are you all dressed up? And in my mind, I'm like, okay, I'm not dressed up. I got on some leggings and a sweater. My hair is in a ponytail. But it was just like that immediate accusation, and that's kind of what I had to deal with. Like, anytime I went to the store, anytime I went anywhere, it was like, where are you at? Who are you with? Clearly, I have receipts. I got bags. I went shopping. My daughter's here with me. And he just was like, I want a divorce. And I'm like, okay. I didn't fight it. I didn't argue. He came home, apologized after he came home from work. And I said, no, like, I can't continue to do this. Like, he begged me for a couple of weeks to stay, and I just couldn't do it. And I knew that in the past, through the counseling professionally, through a therapist, he left in the middle of session, didn't want to go back, didn't want to get help for himself, as I asked him to go to individual therapy aside from couples therapy, and he refused. He said he didn't have the issues. The issue was me, and just left it at that. But then I think the reality hit, and once again, you got to understand, like, narcissistic behavior and gaslighting, people will throw out things to kind of, like, control you. And so when he asked for the divorce, like, I was really done, but clearly he wasn't done. It was just another manipulation. He didn't realize, though, that at that point I had had enough. And so we went through a divorce. We started the process of going through the divorce amicably through, like, disillusion. We were going to do it ourselves. And then I had later found out he had a woman in my home. And, yeah, I'm being very blunt because this is, like, what people go through every day. And I'm not saying I'm innocent in my marriage. I'm not innocent. I haven't been the best wife. I'm sure there's things I could have done. But once again, I'm not going to make excuses for someone else's behavior. It's never okay to put your hands on a man or a woman. And, you know, when I found out that someone else was in my home, he came back from vacation with that person. And then we were talking about what our next steps were, and he assaulted me. And I had contusions all over my body. My hand was damaged. I ended up, my daughter called the police. One of my friends was on the phone with me at the time. When she heard all of this happening, she called the police because he kept hanging up the phone on her. And long story short, nothing was done. Police came. They would not press charges. He said I hit him first, which wasn't true. I was the only one with bruises. He had none. I went to the emergency room. They called me the next day and said, your hand is damaged. You need to go see a surgeon. And from that moment, I hadn't seen him at all. We had no physical contact. I filed a civil protection order, filed for divorce the same week. And me and my kids stayed with my mom for a couple of weeks, and then we went back home. So he was ordered to stay away from the home, and I went back to the home. And then shortly, a couple months later, me and my children found a place to stay, and we moved out. And I literally left with nothing. He didn't want to give me anything. Me and my kids started our lives from scratch with the support of my family and my friends. You know, we had to buy all brand new furniture for a new place. You know, I'm in the process of looking for a new vehicle. Like, I'm not going to say I completely walked away with nothing, because, yes, he's supporting his children, but I literally walked away with nothing but the clothes that I had. And that's okay, because I walked away with way much more than material things. You know, I'm very strong. I'm already a survivor. Now I'm a two-time survivor. And I walked away with a peace of mind. I walked away with more strength, because I could have stayed in that marriage for another 10, 20, 30 years, like a lot of our families do, a lot of our friends do, and continue to endure and make excuses. But I knew that I wanted more, and I wanted to show my children an example of what true strength is. Being strong doesn't mean that, am I strong enough to stay in the nonsense? It's really being strong enough to walk away and preserve your mental health, your physical well-being, and the lives of your children. So, like I told Veronica, and Reverend Ray knows that my situation is very fresh, it's very new. So it can be done. I was furloughed for 6 months while all of this was going on. I had deaths in my family while all of this is going on. Of course, it's COVID. Domestic violence is at an all-time high during this COVID season. But, you know, even despite not working for 6 months and not having his support the whole time until the court ordered it, you know, me and my children have been very blessed, and we have such an amazing support system, and we couldn't have done it. That's why I'm here today, you know, not as just an advocate, but a survivor.
Amen.
Wow. Thank you, Carla. That was a lot to share, and I appreciate you sharing that with us.
Mm-hmm.
So you said a lot of things that I hope that our listeners today can take away from you and apply to their own lives. One of the things that you talked about early on was downplaying what was really happening, and I think that we do that a lot. Like, people think that domestic violence is just someone hitting another person, but it's so much more to it. And I wouldn't say that there are levels, there are different components to it. And what people, I hope that the listeners understand and take away from it is the power and control that the other person just needs to have over an individual. That is the driving force behind the abuse. And they will do anything they have to do to keep that power and control or gain that power and control. You mentioned gaslighting and manipulation. Under that, can I just go over the types of abuse real quick? There is psychological abuse. There's emotional abuse, physical, sexual, property, animal, spiritual, financial, verbal, and the list could continue. But all of those things are used to control another person. And truthfully, no one has control over anyone, only themselves. And I think that when a person is in that situation and they're not sure about what's going on, or they have seen it over and over again. Like, for instance, I thought that my crying when I first got married, I thought my crying was because I was just getting used to someone else being in my space, and I had been on my own for so long, so I'm thinking it's just an adjustment period. But it was verbal abuse and emotional abuse. And I didn't identify it for a while. What we do is we minimize it, like, oh, we need to be stronger. Oh, I need to have tougher skin. And I was told that I needed to have tougher skin. But we downplay all the little nuances that happen in the relationship, in the marriage, even from the very beginning. And when I go back and replay everything now, I see how it started from the very beginning, from our first interactions, with just small conversations, just small little nuggets and little seeds that he was planting in me that made me start doubting myself. So I think the one thing that I would love for the listeners to know is not to downplay what you see. If it's making you uncomfortable, if it is making you question what that other person is doing, and if it is right, if it's kind, if it's loving, if you can't say yes, if it's right, kind, or loving, then you might want to check that and have a conversation with the person, or step aside for a little while just to see what's going on. But definitely don't downplay it. And you can absolutely talk to someone. You can, like I think Ray put in the promos, the number for the National Domestic Violence Hotline. You can call them anytime, 24 hours, 7 days a week, and ask a question as small or as big as you think it might be. Call and ask the question for clarity so that you'll know. What was the other thing? The other thing you talked about was the strong woman, mm-hmm. Carla. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we talked about that today on one of the other shows I was doing. And the strong woman, it doesn't get us in trouble, but we do feel like we should be able to handle everything. And you should mm-hmm. not have to handle or deal with abuse. No one should. Absolutely no one should. That experience, like, anybody can experience it. The strong woman can, the church woman can, or man, because men are not exempt from it. 1 in 7 men are abused. They just don't talk about it and is not reported as often as women, but men are abused by women physically, emotionally, verbally, in manipulation, all of those things. Domestic violence does not have a respect of person. It doesn't matter where you come from, what color you are, how much money you make, how little money you make. It is not reserved for the poor. It's not reserved for blacks. Anybody can become a victim or an abuser themselves. It does not matter where you come from. The other thing you mentioned was that you noticed that, or you knew that he had problems with his family or his parents growing up. And so we were talking about that, Carla, about how a lot of times we have the victim to go back and see if there's a cycle of abuse in her family or his family to see if, you know, if they saw it, if someone abused them. You know, a lot of times we do repeat those cycles because no one told us not to. No one told us what was healthy or showed us what a healthy relationship or marriage looks like. But who talks to the abuser and asks the abuser, what happened? Who did this to you that you think it's okay to do this to someone else? Where are you fractured emotionally that we need to address so that we can help you be healed too? Because there's absolutely healing for the abuser as well as the abused or the victim. It's absolutely healing for that person. They have to want it just as much as the victim. So we were just talking about that earlier the other day, Carla. Is there anything you want to add to it? Because I'm just running on this conversation.
No, those are all good points. I don't know. I just kind of threw my story out there, but no, you're right. I think and with the strong woman, strong man complex, it's like we're conditioned that we have to be strong and we can't show any emotion. This is why we have so many hidden secrets in our families. You know, there's women in my family who've been abused, whether it's domestic violence or sexual abuse, but I didn't even start hearing those stories until I came out with my truth. And so we have to expose those things so that we can heal. We have to stop being so silent because we may be stopping generations from repeating those cycles of abuse. And also the conditioning, our childhood conditioning from either, you know, our religious background, our family, our cultural background, you know, especially in our community, it's like you have to have a high tolerance for pain. And that's where that strong woman complex comes in, because I know I have a high tolerance for pain. But does that mean that we should have a high tolerance for pain? Like, that's not okay. Just dealing, you know, just going through the motions and not really dealing with the root of the issues.
I agree. I agree 100%. That is not something that we should have to deal with. That high tolerance for pain, I never heard it put like that. But you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And then breaking the silence and breaking cycles is so important to talk to the younger generation. Like, years ago, it was what happens in my house stays in my house. Don't talk about family business. And even though family members know about what's going on, they could know what's going on or suspect, but they're afraid to say something. I feel like now, if you see something, inquire, you know, be gentle about it because you just don't know where that person is. But if you see something, say something. At this point, it's out here. No one can keep walking around saying, oh, I walked into a door. They're not that easy to walk into.
Right.
And if you see that, you know, bring your sister or your brother to the side and go, hey, is everything okay? Leave the door open for them to talk. And this is where I wanted to go with that. If you are the person on the outside looking in and you see what's going on, the approach to your loved one has to be gentle. It absolutely has to be gentle and has to be in a space where you allow that person the opportunity to talk if they want to, but don't press them to talk. Don't make them talk, but let them know that they are safe with you. And then don't go and share it. That is one thing that abuse women and men, they don't want to talk about it because they think that someone else is going to share their information or their story, and they don't want to get it, want it to get out because of the shame, because of the stigma, and because of the embarrassment. You just don't want anyone to see that. But if you leave it so that they feel safe and cared for, then they'll absolutely talk at some point. But you have to be gentle with it. I remember being at my cousin's house. I was getting my hair done, and she had a client there. And I don't know what time of year it was, but we were talking about, or they were talking about domestic violence. And the lady was like, I don't know what kind of weak woman would let a man beat on her and blah, 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 blah. I'm sitting there having gone through it, come out of it, yes, but she didn't know me. And I didn't take it personal because she didn't know, but it hurt me so bad that someone would think that, oh, you just sit there and allow it. You don't know what that person has gone through. You don't know what that person is dealing with. You don't know if that person has tried to leave several times. You don't know if that person's leaving will lead to their death or them being physically harmed. A lot of times victims stay because of financial reasons. What if the person is the homemaker and the abuser is the breadwinner? For this person to leave, that means they leave with nothing, nothing. And they're afraid of that. They're afraid of falling. They're afraid of being homeless. Mm-hmm. They're afraid of being hungry. Those are valid fears. And then you add to that, I have children. I have a child. How do I take care of my kid? Do I break up my home? I know I questioned whether I was supposed to leave because I had a daughter. My daughter was not even 2 when I left. And I questioned, do I leave? Do I stay? I wanted a family. I don't know anybody who wanted a family more than me. And when I got it, had the opportunity, I jumped at it. But it wasn't the right marriage for me. And I did stay longer than I needed to. And even though I was only married 1.5 years, I was married a whole year longer than I needed to be married because I wanted my family to stay together. And many times we stay because of those reasons. We stay because that's the way it's done in our family. Like my family, you get married and you have children. So I have 40-something first cousins, and I had lost count of the second and third cousins. And there are 12, 13 aunts and uncles. So we have a big family. That's what we do. It didn't happen like that for me. I wanted it to. And sometimes we follow in that footstep because we think that's what is expected of us. And we stay because that's what you do. You stay together, good times and bad times. No, not if you're being abused. Or we stay together, like you said, because of things that we are doing in church, the stigma, the people going to be looking. There are people in church in high positions who abuse their loved ones. It happens everywhere. And we have to be careful not to spiritually abuse someone else, like using your religion to keep someone else in bondage and manipulate them into staying in situations that are unhealthy for them. That is where we have to be most careful. God did not send Jesus here to die for us to have a desolate, abused, and victimized life. He came that we would have life and have it more abundantly. Abuse is not an abundant life to live.
Not at all.
It is not. We stay for all of those reasons. It could be intimidation. It could be fear. It could be threat. I know of a lady who, and in a very high position in the state, who their ex-husband will call coworkers and supervisors and tell lies on her. That's abuse.
Yeah.
That is abuse. You don't do that. So I don't want to take up all the time, Carla. Go ahead.
No, and I think, you know, like I told you, sometimes I look at my situation and I downplay it because I'm in the bigger scheme of what other people go through. I'm like, but it wasn't that bad. But that's, again, another lie that we tell ourselves in order to, you know, make the situation better. And I know for me, you know, those of us who grew up in single parent households, nobody wants to break up their family, you know, especially if you've seen marriages end abruptly in your family or you have a lot of single parents in your family. You try to break those, as we call them, quote unquote, generational curses or cycles. But breaking a cycle doesn't mean enduring and taking abuse. Breaking a cycle for me, I thought was, well, I've been married 13 years, you know, that's longer than a lot of people that I know in my family, but who haven't been, you know, already divorced. But no, breaking the cycle for me is saying, no, I'm not going to take this. No, I'm not going to be silent about being sexually abused. No, I'm not going to be silent about enduring domestic violence because I'm afraid of, you know, I'll never mention my husband's name, but people know us. Like, and so people are like, but you're so transparent about this. And, you know, I know people worry about me being vulnerable or being attacked because that's another thing we talked about. One, victim downplaying. I've had people tell me, but he only hit you once, right? But that one time turned into multiple times. I've had, you know, people do victim shaming, as we talked about before. Well, what did you do to provoke him? What?
Right.
Like,
right.
So, I mean, there's so many things that comes along with us not being silent. And that's why a lot of women, they just stay, because even in the church, you hear questions and comments like, well, what did you do to provoke him? What did you say? Like, what did you do? And that's one question you should never ask somebody, especially like if you're counseling them or you're trying to help them. And then, like you said, the confidentiality, you know, keeping people's secrets, you know, helping them through their process. It is shameful. Nobody, you know, me and my husband were ministry leaders. Nobody wants to, you know, and I think a lot of what we went through, for him, it was embarrassment. And it was like, okay, now all of our business is out there. And you already know, like, in certain ministries, like, people talk. And so it's just, and it pulls people away from the ministry. And so it was just like an ugly situation for us because it was like we really needed help. But then it became an embarrassment to him, and he just left. And, you know, both of us had to find our own path, stepping away from that for a minute because it was a very difficult time. And, you know, when you're in ministry, you know, you should be able to depend and count on the people you're in leadership with to uphold you, to pray for you, to be there for you, support you. But, you know, and it's a lot of times when you do those, like, couples counseling, you know, sometimes you need somebody to, you know, women to deal with the woman and the man to deal with the man. And not all, everything isn't about the couple. Like, you're trying to fix a couple, but these two individuals are broken. And you have to do your own healing and before you can come together and make a marriage work. And when you got two broken people, there's no fixing that because, of course, I'm not hearing you. You're not hearing me. We're coming from two different broken places. And, you know, like you said, you wanted a family. Like, I wanted a family. I didn't want my dynamic. I had a baby before I got married. And once again, that childhood conditioning, growing up in ministry, I had a baby. Now I got to get married. Like, I got to make this sin right. I got to make this look like a nice package again instead of knowing that I should have never got married. Okay, I made a mistake. I wasn't ready to have a baby yet. But guess what? I'm also not ready to be somebody's wife. So We need to have those honest and real conversations with people before they get in situations that now, 13 years later, I'm breaking up the family anyway because I had to walk away from a situation that's going to impact my children and their future. And it's the cycle comes in that conditioning, what we're teaching people. What the Bible says this and this, is, you know, God expects this. No, that is not, we're not suffering for Christ's sake by being physically abused anymore or by being verbally or emotionally abused. That is not what he meant. Like, it doesn't work like that. And if anybody, and I'm going to just put it out there, people can hate me, but if anybody in ministry feels that way, then you really shouldn't be in ministry because there's really people out here sitting in church every Sunday, broken, can't get free, can't get live that abundant life of wholeness because we're telling them, you got to endure. We're here to suffer for Christ's sake. No, stop telling that lie.
Carla, let me jump in real quick. If there is anyone who needs help right now, even in the future, or if you know of someone who is experiencing abuse on any level, you can call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-SAFE, 1-800-799-7233. And if anyone has a question for either myself or Carla or both of us or Reverend Ray, you can just dial the number and press 1. And we will be happy to take your call. Carla, so much of what you said I wanted to, like, jump on, but I hope
no,
I wrote that all.
I went on a rant.
No, because it was all good. Ways that the church can help. But I'm going to come back to that because I want to say this first. You mentioned about you knew that you should not have gotten married. And I can say for myself, I wanted to be married, but I knew that I shouldn't have married him. And so I had questions even before marrying him. I was talking to a woman not long ago, and she got married at 22. She had a child, and the man that she was going to marry is not her child's father, but he was abusive. And she had gotten out of an abusive relationship. Her mother asked her, "Are you sure you want to do this?" Now, her mother saw this, and her mother asked her the question, "Are you sure?" And her answer was, "Yeah, I'm sure," because that's all she knew was abuse, and that this man over here was going to take care of her. No matter how he treated her, he was going to take care of her. She was 22 at the time. My thing is, if we talk to our young girls and young men early in life and not try to be so closed and secretive about domestic violence, if we talk to them early about healthy relationships, healthy friendships, honoring themselves, valuing themselves, respecting themselves and the other person, treating people and yourself with kindness, I do believe that some of this can be curtailed, and I do believe that we can start on the path to breaking this cycle of abuse. Like you said, you didn't want to break up your family. When I got pregnant with my daughter, I started reading everything that I could about being a parent and being a mom to a girl because I was so excited. And for whatever reason, after she was born, I guess I was reading about domestic violence. I don't know. But something I read said that her memory kicks in after she's 2 years old. And I knew then that I needed to make a decision before she turned two because I did not want her to see any of it. I didn't want her to remember it because she was part of it. She experienced it as a baby because I was holding her when I was attacked. She experienced it because she has seen him hit me. But she doesn't remember it because I left before she was two, and I thank God that he showed me that. Now this little girl has no memory of abuse in her family. Now what she sees is yes, her mom and her, a single parent home, but she sees love. She feels love. She's shown how to express love and friendship and kindness to other people. And I pray that when she's old enough to have a relationship, she will gravitate and bring people towards her that are caring and loving and not abusive like where she came from. That's my hope. And I hope that start having these conversations with these kids because they need to know early. They need to know. If we had known when we were children that someone talking down to you, like those sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt. They cut deep. Words cut deep. And so we learn that as kids and we take that into a marriage and think it's okay for someone to talk to us with disrespect. It is not. It is not. The other thing that I wanted to make sure, because I'm not with her father, I made it a point not to talk bad about him to her and not to allow her to hear me say negative things about her father. So it's important that we teach our young ladies and our friends who are abused not to man bash. It's wrong on every level. Even if he is wrong for what he's done, what he said, it is never okay to man bash or woman bash, especially to the children, especially to their friends and their coworkers, is never okay. And so that is the one thing that I'm not saying that we should do that, and that's not what we're doing today. We're telling our story and our experiences and how it's happened for us. But this can absolutely happen to a man, and he can very well tell his same story about a woman doing the same thing. We have a caller. Caller 0068, you are on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to just join the conversation. You ladies are both so brave. But one thing I didn't hear get brought up, and I think a lot of times it gets looked over or kind of swept under the rug, and I just wanted to know if you guys had experience with this or had seen it before, but when the abused becomes the abuser, because they become so conditioned in relationships that the toxicity kind of seeps in to their emotional being and their mental being. So they stop fighting back as a defense and sometimes start fighting as an offense. And it moves in from relationship to relationship. Myself personally, I was in an abusive relationship, unfortunately, at a very young age. And it set the ground for my relationships moving forward. It just kind of set the tone because I thought that's what love was. I thought love became physical when you got upset because as a teenager, one of the first times my boyfriend or my so-called boyfriend at that age got upset with me, he hit me, he pulled my hair, and I thought that, oh, is this what this is? He must love me. He loves me enough to discipline me even as his girlfriend. So you kind of get that embedded in you moving forward. Did any of you ladies ever deal with just becoming hostile or find yourself getting out of character in your relationship, even if you moved into other relationships afterwards, or just being snappy or just not feeling like yourself, easily angered, things like that?
Thank you so much for bringing that to our attention and putting that out there and being so brave to share that with us. And I really appreciate you for doing that. I can say for myself, yes, this is Veronica. I was the girl in elementary school who fought everybody because I got tired getting on me. And so my dad told me, hit them back. And so that's what I knew to do. Protect myself and fight back because, number one, I was shorter than most of the girls and boys in my class.
moving forward to being 15 years old, I was sitting at lunch with my girlfriend and this little boyfriend that I had. He was so cute. He was in the hall. We were on different lunch breaks. So he saw me and called me to the hall, and I said, okay. So I told my girlfriend, I'll be right back. Went out to see what he wanted. His question to me was, why didn't you tell me that you were going to lunch with your friends? I was waiting for you. I had no clue. And he slapped me right across my face. All Veronica knew how to do was fight. So I punched him in his chest. I turned away. I went back to lunch with my girlfriend and never told them because I was conditioned to fight back. Fast forward to a young adult relationship where my boyfriend did not do what I wanted him to do for me, or I got frustrated, I hit him. Now, this guy was like 6'3", 200-something pounds. I'm 5'4". I was about 130 pounds soaking wet. And I lashed out as much as I could. And one day, he grabbed my arms, and he didn't hurt me. He grabbed my arms to get my attention, and I'm not downplaying anything. And he said, Veronica, if you hit me again, I'm going to hit you back. I snapped out of it, and I stopped. But I absolutely became aggressive. I absolutely took on the role of I have to protect me because nobody else is going to protect me. And, yes, I turned around and I hurt other people with my hands. I hurt other people with my words because I was not going to allow that to happen to me again. It did in my marriage. But just leaving that marriage, I spent the last 5-6 years, me and God, talking to him and learning more and more about me, what makes me tick. I went to counseling. I am not afraid or ashamed to say that I spent counseling. I had support. My parents kept my daughter every Saturday that I went to counseling because I needed it. I needed to rid my life of it. So, yes, it absolutely happens. And when you see that in yourself, it is not okay. It is not okay. But there is help for you too. There is healing for you too. There is a deliverance for you too. And you can break out of that. And you can be a different person. And you could break, you could shed all of that hurt and all of that pain. And you don't have to defend yourself or fight anymore because God is fighting for you and he's freed you from all of that. That's and I hope that helped you.
Yes, thank you so much. It's always the person who becomes the abuser gets looked down on. Of course, you're immediately categorized, like you said, as being aggressive. But rarely do people stop to ask you your story. What made you aggressive? Where did it come from? Because I don't think we are conditioned, especially as women or young girls, we're not conditioned to be aggressive. We're not conditioned to immediately want to put our hands up or be defensive, whether it be verbally or physically. So a lot of times, I think that when we do become the abuser or in situations, I don't even want to say the abuser, just become so defensive that's your first line of action is to just fight. That's a part of the wall that you put up. But it gets looked down upon so much. Coming from a woman, I think Carla said that people, even friends, were even trying to make excuses for her husband without making excuses. Well, what did you do? What did you say? What happened that set him off? It's almost like it's okay for a man to get upset and want to use his hands, but it's not okay for women because we shouldn't be aggressive. We shouldn't be doing this. We shouldn't be doing that. So I just really wanted to join the conversation just to put that out there. And like you said, counseling is vital. I went through counseling as well for that because I was angry and I didn't know how to deal with, I didn't know how to be in relationships. I just simply did not know how to be in relationship and a healthy relationship without at some point it turning verbally violent or physically violent at some point. So I hope there are ladies out there that realize they are not alone if they somehow got the tables turned on them. Not to be ashamed, but to get help. To get
help. Exactly.
Thank you, ladies, so much. Thank you, ladies, so much.
Thank you. So the last piece before we have to get off of here, I want to appeal to the churches, places of worship, ministry leaders. Not everyone is equipped to handle a domestic violence situation. And if you are not, you're not expected to and try to and take some of that burden off of you. However, there are organizations out here who can come in and train your staff, train ministry leaders, train those over the men's and women's ministry in how to assist, and how to assist with helping someone who has experienced domestic violence. Also, if you are not in a position to or you don't have the staff to do that, you can also place in your bathrooms, on the bathroom stalls, information about helpline. The domestic violence hotline, again, is 800-799-SAFE, 1-800-799-7233. Or you can dial 211 and just put that in the bathroom. At least that woman can see or that maid can see that there's a number for them to dial to get help. So that is one way that the church can help, at least be the place that someone can go to and get a phone number and a place of a resource. Ray, I'm sorry, Ray, you said you had something you needed to say?
Yeah, real quick, I just want to make sure that everybody knows that especially us as believers, I mean, the world's going to be the world, but it is never God's will for us as men to put our hands on our wives, okay, on anybody for that matter. And First Peter, real quick, it talks about that. Really not rendering evil for evil. This is First Peter, verses 3 and 9. Not rendering evil for evil, or railing for railing, but contrariwise, blessing, knowing that you are there to call that you should inherit a blessing. Okay? So it's never okay for us to put our hands on each other, and it's definitely not okay for a man to do it. Okay? So I want to make sure, because I know a lot of people out there may think that, well, that they do so. No, it's never okay for you to do that. You know, walk out the door, do whatever you got to do first. Drink some coffee, you know, whatever you got to do and stuff like that, but it's never okay. And they had mentioned earlier about physical, but we're also talking emotional. We're also talking words, because words do have power. Okay. I had shared with someone earlier that if I call my spouse out of her name and stuff like that, then I'm also talking about myself, because my spouse is part of me. Okay? So if you sit there and say, tell your spouse that I hate you, well, you're saying to you to your own self that you hate yourself too, because you're joined together and everything. So we have to be very careful with words that come out of our mouth, even in anger with our spouse and all of that kind of thing. We have to just got to be careful, man, by what we say. Because we sit there and mess around and put a curse on our own self and not even realize that we're doing it, you know. Don't want to put a curse on ourselves. We don't want to put a curse on our spouse either. But I'm going to turn back over. That's all I had to say. We got some time, so finish up whatever you got, okay, and stuff. I'm sorry. I wasn't going to say anything. I would add that, okay.
No, thank you so much. Go ahead, Carla, if you have something.
No, I just wanted to reiterate with the training in churches. You know, there's free online training for advocates and victim assistance. You can also go through the Domestic Violence Network, especially for churches or any other organizations who need to be equipped to deal with those situations, even in schools, to deal with those types of situations in their organizations. You know, there's a lot more young people who are going through domestic violence in their relationships as well, teenagers in school. So I also want to put that out there that, you know, you may not be licensed, but there are training advocacy groups that you can go through to at least be able to handle the initial intake phase and then direct them to areas they can get further assistance.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I guess it's almost out of time and I didn't want to go over, but I did want to just go back over the myth so that we would know those things that to look out for and the things not to downplay. One of the things you said, Carla, women provoke men to be abusive, and that is absolutely a myth, and vice versa. The other thing is men are not victims of domestic violence. That is absolutely a myth. One thing, if it was so bad, the person would leave. That is not always the case. We know that sometimes it is not in the best interest of that person to leave at that moment because it may be a very volatile situation. It could lead to their death or hurt or the death of someone else. So it's not always as easy as someone thinks it is. Here's one that we did not touch on. Alcohol use or mental illness causes abuse. And that is absolutely a myth. Now, if it's in you, then it comes out of you. And alcoholism absolutely, it increases the likelihood that you will act on what you're feeling. So it is a myth. And then only poor people experience abuse and only, that is not the truth. It is a falsehood. It's a lie. Anybody can experience it anywhere. And one of the statistics is 1 in 4 women and 1 in 7 men experience abuse at least once in their lifetime. That is a lot of people. And if we could do our part, if we could do our part and break the silence to help break the cycle in our community, it would help us to preserve the family and preserve the life of our children and our legacies. So that is my story, and I just hope that I just hope that we would all do our part and be supportive of those who are victims, know the those who are abusers. There is help out there for you as well, and you can absolutely call the domestic violence hotline. You can call the other domestic violence organizations in your city or state, and they will help you because there is hope for you. There is help for you. There's healing for you as well. I don't ever want to leave you out. I don't ever want you to feel victimized or bashed. There is help for you too, and God loves you too. So that is all I have. And I thank Reverend Ray for allowing me and my friend Carla to speak and share with you all today. And thank you all for listening in. So Ray is back to you, sir.
Okay. All right. Carla, you had nothing else to say, right? You good?
No, I'm good. Thank you for allowing us this opportunity.
Okay. I'll stand there. Again, I want to welcome those who have been listening to this broadcast, this special broadcast about domestic violence awareness. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and I've been joined with Prophet Carla Smith and Veronica Burnett and everything. I just got a text said that women provoke men to be abusive. Men are not victims of domestic violence, but if it was so bad, the person would leave alcohol. Use of mental illness causes abuse. Only poor people experience abuse. Okay, all right, I see what you did. Okay, but in the meantime, I just read that. I'm going to post that onto our website and on the Facebook page and everything. But again, Carla and Veronica, thank you much. You guys have a great and wonderful rest of the afternoon. Those that have been listening in, you'll be able to listen to this broadcast in its entirety in about probably about 20 minutes. You can listen to us on iHeartRadio, iTunes, Spreaker, just to name a few. You also can go to our website and everything. And this is very important information for you. Again, please, please, as they have been speaking all this time already, please get help, okay? Don't try to go this alone. Realize that you are loved and you're not by yourself. One of the numbers that you can dial is, again, 1-800-799-SAFE or 1-800-799-7233. So you please be blessed, be safe out there and everything, and know that God loves you and we love you too. So take care. Again, thanks, Veronica, and thanks, Carly. God bless.
Thank you.
All right.